Tom Woods Show, episode 1613.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here, the Tom Woods Show.
Folks, if you enjoy the Tom Woods Show, it's time to go to the next level. And next level, Tom Woods, is libertyclassroom.com. This is where my friends and I teach all the stuff you did not get in your conventional education, history, economics, and more, the way it ought to be taught, with all the content they left out or distorted. Check it out at libertyclassroom.com. Hey, everybody, Tom Woods here. Got Dave Smith on the show today. I want to tell you before we get started, though, that I'm planning to have Peter Schiff back on the program. We had him on not too long ago to answer listener questions. Now I want to have him back to talk about the economics of the coronavirus situation, because, of course, if you're going to have people stay home indefinitely and you're going to be proposing all kinds of remedies for that, those are going to have some interesting, let's say, economic consequences, not to mention what the Fed is doing. So I want to have Peter on it to sort all that out. So that's coming up. I don't know exactly which day this week, but that will be coming up. I want to get that on here as quickly as possible, although I suppose this issue is not going away anytime soon. The economics of what they're doing is not going to go away anytime soon, but I'm going to have him on just as soon as possible. Right now, we're talking to Dave Smith, and we're just going to shoot the breeze about some things that have been going on. And sometimes, all the time, it's fun to talk about gossipy things in the libertarian movement. I mean, come on now. Pretend all you want that that doesn't interest you, but we know. The download figures don't lie, people. People enjoy these. Dave Smith, of course, is the host of the podcast Part of the Problem over on the Gas Digital Network. He is a stand-up comedian whose inaugural comedy special, Libertas, wound up spending 3 weeks at the number one spot on iTunes in comedy. So that is a great, great, great accomplishment for him. And we've got some fun stuff to talk about. Dave, welcome back.
Thank you, Tom. As always, it's an honor to be with you.
I really got some fantastic feedback on Dave Smith Week. So today I officially declare to be Dave Smith Day.
Dave Smith Day. We'll make it feel like a week.
Yeah. Darn right. I want to start off saying a little something about your podcast, Part of the Problem, which really has just exploded over the past, I mean, past 2 to 3 years, it's really taken off. But I would say from my vantage point as an outsider, my guess is that over the past 8 to 12 months, you've seen the most spectacular growth. That's a guess. But I listen to it pretty regularly. I don't listen to it with my kids in the car for obvious reasons, but I like getting your take. And in a way, I almost envy you in that you can riff, I think, very, very effectively just with a few headlines, a few news stories, and your commentary is pretty spot on and interesting and lively. And I do some solo episodes of this show, but not nearly as many as people want me to do. And it's because I'm not sure I'm as good at that, that I can just turn the microphone on and produce something that's of the quality that you produce. I feel like I work better with a guest. And you have guests, but geez, you have these shows. You're talking for an hour plus, and it works, man. So I don't know. I mean, I feel like I'm asking you to explain to me as a comedian how you write a joke, because that you can't explain that. So if I'm asking you, how did you get to be such a darn good podcaster? I mean, first of all, that's like the lamest softball over the plate question I think I've ever asked any guest. But I kind of want to know the answer, frankly.
I mean, honestly, I've always just had a big mouth and I've never shut up. I mean, you could ask my mother. I think from the time I was like a year and a half old, I've just never shut up. And I like to just, I'm not good at kind of like preparing, and I've never been good at being concise. Like I ramble, that's just my nature. And I felt like after a while, I just kind of found my niche with Part of the Problem in really picking apart the kind of political theater. And I, you know, it's like you're like the absolute best at dissecting different specific topics and having guests on with that. And there's other people who in this kind of, you know, in our space who have other, you know, talents. Obviously, like Scott is the absolute best at breaking down everything with, you know, what's going on with the foreign wars and stuff like that. And I think I just found my niche with picking apart the news of the day. And because I, whatever my own skill set and being able to talk forever. And the fact that I've kind of had a bit of a career in cable news, I kind of have a little bit of an insight into how the news operates and how those people think. And so I'm just kind of able, having that and having also read a whole lot of Mises and Rothbard and Tom Woods and Lou Rockwell and all these people, there's not too many people who have all of that. And so I think it gives me kind of a different perspective. And yeah, I mean, you're not wrong. Something kind of clicked. It's been a few years of big growth, but something in the last year really kind of clicked, and we've been doing really well. So I'm very, very happy about it.
Also, I think you've been very good at spotting opportunities to elevate your profile. And that's not, some people might think I'm criticizing you or something, like you're an egomaniac or something. No. Like, for example, debating Nick Sarwark at the Soho Forum, that was fantastic for you. That was great. That gave you a great platform. A lot of people who had not heard of you before heard of you as a result of that. Like, you've been very good at doing things like that. I mean, you have been kind of going into the public eye almost at the same time that I've been more withdrawing from it. As I've gotten older, I've just been happier to be kind of quiet, having my podcast, staying home. And you have just kind of grabbed opportunity after opportunity. And I'm so glad to see it. I would like to have it be somebody like you who's likable, knowledgeable, good at this sort of stuff. Are we allowed to announce the thing you told me on the phone the other day about a pretty big gig, libertarian gig you have coming up?
Yeah, sure. Why not? I signed the contract, so we can announce it.
All right. Go ahead and tell everybody what it is you're doing. Now, let's assume that the apocalypse is over by then.
Yeah.
Let's talk about what you're doing in July.
Assuming the apocalypse is over and I don't have to be fighting zombies outside of my home, I will be hosting Freedom Fest, the entire festival this year. I'm going to be hosting the whole thing. So I'm very excited for that. I've never done it before, never been there before, but they brought me in to do the whole week this year. So I'm very excited.
I love that you've never even been there before, and now you're the host of the whole thing. This is an event, in case people don't know, I bet a lot of you do know, but some of you may not. It's been held in Las Vegas year after year for a long time. We've had the founder of Freedom Fest on this program a number of times, Mark Skousen, and I'm really, really glad about that. And it's my hope, again, assuming everything's normal, I mean, I'm supposed to be out there speaking as well the early part of the week. And then I'm going to get out of there the later part so I can catch at least part of Mises University program. But I'll see you out there. That's a wonderful thing. And that, too, is great for part of the problem. So let's now that I've buttered you up unnecessarily, like, you're already my friend. There's no real need for this, but it is absolutely heartfelt, and I mean it all sincerely. I want to talk to you about a recent episode you did that came about because of a Twitter exchange. And I'm going to let you reveal it, but I will say you handled it so well. It was, I mean, only a complete ninny could object to how you handled it. And of course, unfortunately, our movement is nothing if not full of ninnies. But at least on the fringes, we got some ninnies. Who am I talking about, and how did that come about?
Yeah, so I just, last week, I had Michelle Malkin on the show. It came about because I guess someone had tweeted, trying to attack me. And they said that I forget the exact tweet, but it was something ridiculous. They were like, not only did Dave Smith have Christopher Cantwell on his show in 2017, but then he went to the America First Pack and was hanging out with Nick Fuentes and Michelle Malkin. And of course, this is just not even kind of true.
There's 100% chance that did not happen.
None of it happened. I've never met Nick Fuentes in person. I've never met Michelle Malkin at all before that. I've never had an interaction with her at all, except I think she tweeted out one of my episodes and I said, thanks for sharing or something like that. And then she responded and was like, hey, I'd love to do your podcast. And I was like, okay, absolutely. Like, let's do it. And for people who don't know, Michelle Malkin, was like a Fox News contributor for a while. She was a regular on Hannity. She's got millions of Twitter followers. She was like kind of she was a fixture of the Fox News George W. Bush era conservatives, like one of their more controversial figures, and then has come out and supported like the Groypers in the side of the Groyper War recently, and has been completely kicked out of respectable conservatism, Inc. And I just, you know, I was like, hey, that's a real interesting conversation to have. So I was very happy to have her on the show.
It was very well handled. And I have a few things I want to say about it. First of all, I now find her 10 times more interesting than I ever did. I met her briefly at an event in D.C. probably 15 years ago or more. Very briefly, she knew who I was, and we had a few pleasant words, and that was it. But at that time, she was kind of part of Conservatism, Inc., as she will readily admit now. And I just didn't find her that interesting. She would say something bold every now and again, but it was pretty much within the expected confines of a D.C. conservative conference. Whereas now, yeah, again, she's not a libertarian. But man, I mean, she's willing to admit where she's been wrong, which is an important step forward. She does, yes, she does have interesting things to say. And yes, she has some things to say that are objectionable. But when I had Ralph Nader on my show, I didn't get one of these whiny ninnies out there that I call the loser brigade. I didn't get one of those people saying, well, why didn't you hit at him for all the government intervention he's favored in the past? You know, why didn't you rake him over the coals for this or that? Not one person, not one ever said that.
Yeah.
Because what I had him on to talk about was left and right collaborating against war. Now, I could have him on and say, you know, I invited you on to talk about left and right collaborating against war, but now that I have you, let's talk about your stupid safety regulations and this and that. I mean, nobody acts like that. Literally nobody. There's no host who would ever get repeat guests who acts like that. So yeah. So you notice there's a difference? No, and again, nobody would care if I had John McCain on the show. These ninnies would not care one bit if I had John McCain on. But you have Michelle Malkin on, and they go berserk. Even though she is more hardcore anti-state in her own way than most of the people who have been running for president on the Libertarian Party ticket. Hello?
Yeah, there's something really strange about this dynamic. And I remember Jeff Dice said this to me. I believe he said something very similar on your show in a Jeff Dice week on one of the episodes. I can't remember which one. But he said, you know, there's this weird game that you have to play where, okay, anybody like on the left is misguided at worst, but anyone on the right is evil. Like that can just be thrown at them. So like somebody like, you know, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, we have to just be like, well, she's just, you know, she doesn't understand economics. Or Ralph Nader, he just doesn't understand economics. But Pat Buchanan, there's like something evil there, you know? Like you just have to kind of play this game that the left can't be evil. And as Jeff Dice said, he's like, I mean, how much evidence do you need? Look at the 20th century. You want to tell me the left can never be evil? I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. And I just think this is almost like a fixed game. If you're going to play that, well, then obviously the left is going to come out winning every single time. And I was very complimentary toward Tulsi Gabbard in the beginning of her run for president. And I never seem to get anybody who's like, you know, like, oh, this is an outrage. You know, she signed on to the Green New Deal and all this stuff. And by the way, that is an outrage. I mean, and Ralph Nader's, you know, his safety regulation stuff, I mean, it destroyed Flint, Michigan. It's really terrible. You know, it's not that I'm saying like statism is very, very bad and a lot of their, you know, beliefs are terrible. But if I were to say, hey, well, okay, we disagree on that, but I really agree with, you know, whoever. I really agree with Jimmy Dore on the issue of war and peace and the issue of, you know, taking down the CIA and the FBI, the whole national security apparatus and all that, they'd be like, well, yeah, of course, we can form an alliance on those issues, you know, no problem. But then you have this, the new right, if you will, where you have like maybe when I had Nick Fuentes on or Michelle Malkin or someone like that, and I go, okay, well, yeah, obviously they have a lot of issues that I disagree with them about. I'm not quiet about that. Everyone knows how I feel on those issues. But okay, this is a group of people who are pretty hardcore anti-war, anti-deep state, anti-welfare, anti-Fed, Are you telling me there's nothing that we can find there to say, hey, okay, we kind of agree with them on that? Are you telling me there's no value in someone who was a George W. Bush cheerleader admitting that Ron Paul was right all along? Like, I'm supposed to pretend there's nothing? We can't be fellow travelers on those issues at least. And what it comes down to is that these nannies that you're talking about, the Loser Brigade says, no, but those people are racist. So this is now the word. They borrow the word of the left, and this is supposed to disqualify any of those things. And by the way, it's not a coincidence that's the same thing they'd throw at Ron Paul, Lou Rockwell, Hans Hermann Hoppe, you, me. This vague word racist, which is, you know, could, from what I understand, can mean anything from like slavery to saying blacks instead of African Americans. Like, it's just got a wide range that you never have to really prove or disprove. And I all I'm saying is that, like, there's a lot of different things that, you know, that you could consider racist that I would think are abhorrent and I would object to. But there's a real problem with libertarians saying somehow we have to be more outraged by racism than statism. So the fact that AOC or the fact that Tulsi Gabbard signs on to the Green New Deal is not as much of a problem as someone saying that, like, you know, I don't really like people of a different race. Because, I mean, you can see, right, the real problem for that, for a libertarian, is that one is a violation of the non-aggression principle and the other one is not necessarily. Me and you may not like it, but to say that that's the thing that makes you, you're not allowed to talk to that person. And if you do, you better screech the whole time that you talk to them. I reject that. And I think it's absurd and it's a devastating, like, it's a losing strategy. If we go down that road, then we're doomed.
Let me amplify your point with just a reference to your Michelle Malkin interview. You were generous with her in that you didn't think that it was a good idea to taunt her for having been wrong in the past, for having been part of George W. Bush conservatism. A lot of people we know were part of George W. Bush conservatism, and they all know full well, boy, I shouldn't have done that. I get that that was a big, big mistake. But you nevertheless, I think you handle it just right. You nevertheless didn't quite let her off the hook. You said, you know, the fact is Ron Paul was right about all these things, all these wars and all the stuff he talked about. He turned out to be 100% right. And you got her on the air to agree with that statement. Like, that is a big deal. That right there. And so that, again, there is no way that, and when I, in case anybody doesn't know what I'm talking about, the Loser Brigade is a bunch of literal nobodies on social media. They have not published a book. They have done nothing. They've literally accomplished nothing. That's why I refuse to mention any of their names. They've accomplished absolutely nothing. There's no way this is about limiting the state for them. That absolutely can't possibly be, because then they would see your point of view on this. It's advancing some other kind of agenda. It's their personal likes and dislikes is what makes somebody a libertarian. But the way you did that, you got her to admit that it was, I have a proud moment, not quite that one, but I had Pat Buchanan on, and we were talking about one of his books on Nixon. And I said to him, Pat, even from your own point of view as a conservative, wouldn't you admit that intervening in Vietnam was a mistake? Because look at the cultural repercussions are the very sorts of things you deplore. And the alienation of the youth and all these things that ended up occurring and what happened to the economy led to all kinds of bad outcomes and this and that. And then after all that, the communists ended up winning anyway. Yeah. And the world didn't end. It was fine. The world did not end. There was no dominoes that fell because of that. Everything was fine. So all you had was an enormously expensive war that strengthened the state and that created a cultural war inside the country. How can you as a conservative support that? I got him within a hair's breadth of conceding that point. Now that's, you know, that's not bad. He helped to formulate those policies in the Nixon White House. He was writing the speeches and all that.
Yeah.
That, you know, I got that. He's willing to listen. And I think there's a reason that as much as, I mean, you can find me denouncing Fox News over and over and over again in my backlog of writing. There's so much in there against Fox News. But the fact is Fox News will have you and me on.
Yeah.
But MSNBC, not so much. They'll have safe libertarians every once in a while. And I've been on MSNBC. But I think there's a reason for that. I think, in my experience, people on the right are somewhat more open-minded. I think that's the case.
Oh, I mean, to me, it seems like no question. There's no question about that. And I mean, I've said on Fox News multiple different times, and I've said it to Fox News conservatives, George Bush should be locked up for war crimes. And, you know, they don't agree with me, but they'll keep having me back. Now, if I were to, you know, say these things about Barack Obama, I mean, Jeremy Scahill isn't getting invited back on MSNBC too much because he said that, and they're just not willing to hear that. And no, so I think you're absolutely right. And, you know, this is something that you can't help but notice. There is a difference. And, you know, like you said, with the thing with Pat Buchanan, I mean, that's like an incredible thing to get him to kind of think about, even if he's not willing to completely admit it because he's so loyal to a fault to Richard Nixon. But that's like an incredible moment. And look, as you mentioned with these guys, the loser brigade, I mean, it's these people who have 65 Twitter followers. It's always, I make this joke a lot, but it's the guys with their pronouns in their bios. Like, yeah, He'll just be some guy and he's like, you know, him, his, or whatever.
Yeah,
like,
well, yeah.
Why? What? Why is this necessary for you? It's just, are you, so basically, you're just letting us know you're a really good person. I care so much about the 0.3% of people who don't identify as the gender they're born. Like, okay, fine. And all of them, they never have any following. These are people who, what they're doing is, I mean, I actually can't imagine how sad an existence it is to do nothing but like hate post against the people who you feel are, you know, these evil people every single day, and no one cares.
Yeah.
Imagine just every day, just these people, there's like seven of them, they tweet at me and you every single day and no one cares. It gets two likes. No, it's having no effect. It's like, man, you got to go outside. You got to try to meet a girl. You got to go try to meet a her, she, and yeah, settle down.
I know.
Get a life.
Now, on the other hand, Dave, somebody could say, but look, these people have so little following. Why do you bother with them? And there are a number of reasons. One, it's just flat out fun. It's fun to have fun with these people because it sounds like there are more than they are, because all they do is this stuff all day. And then you realize it's like 10 people. But the other thing is, it is actually the loser brigade that runs the Libertarian Party of Nevada. That was probably the worst Libertarian Party chapter in the U.S. I mean, I have spoken at the conventions of many state parties. I've spoken at the National LP Convention. I'm not getting an invitation from Nevada, but I think I'm gonna survive. I'll speak at Freedom Fest to literally 100 times as many people as would be at an LP. I mean, more, maybe 1,000 times as many people as would be at an LP state convention. But all the same, there's a guy who is a prominent part of that Nevada LP who has said, and you think Woods has to be making this up. No, it goes to what you said earlier. He said, sure, the communists were wrong, but they were wrong in good faith. I don't know if you've seen this, Dave. You've seen this?
I did. Someone showed me this, yes.
They were wrong in good faith. So in other words, because their stated goals were to help people, then I guess we have to assume that was their intention. They just want to help workers. I mean, like, that's the level of, it's like saying, well, the name of that piece of federal legislation is the Help the Starving Children Act, so that's all I need to know. It right. must be for the, I mean, how unbelievably naive can you possibly be?
Right, right. It's like calling North Korea, well, I mean, they're a people's republic. So,
right, I mean, it's,
you know,
right, they, there they in the name.
Yeah, I mean, they had good goals. You know, I mean, sure, they're starving children, but they, you know, I mean, look, they're right there. They're for the people. It's the height of absurdity. And, you know, the other thing about it is that I go back and forth a little bit, because at times it'll be like, okay, I'm going to ridicule these people, or I'm going to ignore them. But the problem is also that there are, say, like newcomers in this world who don't know who's who.
Right.
And they hear these horrible accusations about you and about me. And then you go like, well, maybe it is a little bit necessary to kind of defend ourselves. Because, like, I mean, look, when they were coming at you, I mean, they would come at you with the most ridiculous, ridiculous stuff. Like stuff that if you've spent, I mean, I'm not exaggerating. If you've spent 5 minutes researching this stuff, you'd know this is all complete. You know, like they said the thing where you said, you know, whatever you said, you say a lot of the stuff I can't say to Christopher Cantwell, like 5 years before he became a racist. So anybody who looks into this would know this.
Of course.
But if somebody doesn't look into it and just kind of glancingly sees it, and maybe like I'm just thinking like maybe someone who's a good person but who's new to this and isn't doing the research or whatever, and they go, oh, I didn't realize that about Tom. Like he agrees with Charlottesville. I didn't realize that's what he was saying. You know what I mean? It's almost like, okay, well, maybe it's worth it to explain to that person, no, these people are idiots and they're lying and they're not acting in good faith. This is and they know it and they know they're doing that. And the I think the reason is that, you know, it's unfortunate. It's a difficult situation because then these people are not acting in good faith and they know what they're doing. And this is the only way they have any relevance is this. So if they're like, nobody wants to read their books, nobody wants to listen to their podcast, they haven't built an audience. But if they attack people who have built an audience, then they kind of can generate some kind of juicy, you know, posts or something like that. So I struggle with it a little bit, but I thought it was really great what you did when you put out that newsletter where you were like, look, okay, once and for all, I'm going to answer these five stupid accusations and just smash them. Cause like, why not? You know, it's just for the good people who do care to look into it. Here's the truth of the situation.
Right. Now here's a funny thing about that. So first the problem with me was we've made all these accusations and he won't answer them. So what do you think that means?
Right.
Then I do answer them and they say, oh, somebody's a little bit sensitive. Look at him answering. Okay. Obviously nothing I do is going to satisfy these people. But the reason that I did that was number one, so I could have somewhere online just, you know, for a normal person, not a deranged lunatic, but a normal person could evaluate it and say, okay, I think I can see who the lunatic in this situation is. But also, I am very much a proponent of the idea of monetizing your haters. And I think I would give myself a solid B+ as a monetizer of haters. Because when I posted that long defense of myself, and you may think, oh, that just sounds boring. Who's going to want to read this whole thing? You would want the way I wrote it, you would want to read the whole thing. And at the end, I had an affiliate link. And when people click on that, I earn 20% of the revenue of everything that comes in. Well, I got a lot of views of that post and a lot of revenue. I made a fortune off these people. And so I decided that I was going to take whatever money I made and just go on a vacation. So I tweeted out my favorite tweet of all time. It's a picture of me in the Bahamas. and there's a dialogue. It's them, : no way Woods can monetize this. And then me, : greetings from the Bahamas, blankety blanks. And then it's a picture of me in the Bahamas. They paid for that entire trip. And I intend to repeat that in various ways over and over again if they want to make me rich, because they are doing that. And I love it because that's the best possible revenge. Not only are you laughing at them, and these are the most humorless people in the world, but to actually make money off them, that's another thing. And then, so one other thing, I was on a podcast, somebody else's podcast about a month ago, and this guy went to where the Loser Brigade hangs out. And he says, look, I'm interviewing Tom Woods. I want to know, what would you like me to ask him? Here's your chance to ask him a question. And Dave, I am not kidding you. You're not going to believe the question they want to ask me. I mean, this is how either evil they are or completely tone deaf. Does he believe in executing gay children? Was the question they wanted to ask me. I mean, that's mental illness. And I don't, you know, I've stopped using mental illness as a term of derision because I was wrong to do that because people do struggle with mental illness and I don't want to make that a term of derision and make fun of it. But I don't know how else to explain that, Dave, other than mental illness.
Yeah, it's almost like maybe it is a point where you should start feeling, you know, and I've felt this way with like some of the social justice warriors, as they're called, on like college campuses, like the people, the really, really crazy ones who would be like heckling Jordan Peterson when he gives a speech, you know, like the one, the like 300-pound, like blue hair, like with like her like belly button piercing hanging out. And like so this like really like weird person who's like screaming, you know, they're like, I identify as Zer and you're a Nazi and you're... And at first, it's so easy to kind of make fun of them and deride them. And then you're like, you know what? Maybe I actually should have a little bit of pity for this person. And like, this is a person who's like, I don't know what the deal is. Maybe there's just like some wiring isn't right. Maybe they were abused as a child. Like something is going on.
And I know this sounds like we're being patronizing, but Dave, I'm out of explanations.
Well, something's going on. I don't know but my first instinct is to go like, you must just be acting in bad faith. Like, you know that I don't believe that, or you know that Tom doesn't believe that. There's never anything we've ever said that could even indicate that. But maybe it is just people who are like sick. And if that's the case, maybe we should almost, you know, feel bad for them a little bit. But either way, sick people can be destructive as well. And the thing, you know, the thing that infuriates me is that there'll be these people, right? And like, it's like that you made like a great point on this recently on Twitter when you said, like, wouldn't you just leave the libertarian movement? Like, if you thought that me and you and Scott Horton and, you know, whoever else, all the guys, Mance Rader, all these guys are like these horrible, evil people, and you have 36 Twitter followers and you know what I mean? Like, no, and everyone's like getting behind us. Wouldn't you be like, well, this movement is just poison?
It's hopeless, right? Yeah.
These people make me think the movement's hopeless sometimes.
Yeah, right. And then I remember, okay, they have no following.
Exactly.
So in other words, their view is that the most popular people in libertarianism who have a huge following, these are all wicked and toxic people. Then what does that tell you about libertarianism?
I mean, this is like what they'll tell you is that, like, you know, like Ron Paul, Lou Rockwell, Hans Hermann Hoppe, Tom Woods, Dave Smith, these are all evil people. I mean, if that's the case, then geez, libertarianism is hopeless.
I feel bad, Dave, actually telling you this, but literally, and I mean this in the literal sense of the word literally, the day before you started getting pounded by the Loser Brigade, I was saying out loud, you know, how come Dave Smith never gets in trouble? I actually said that to a friend privately. I said, you know, geez, I get attacked for all these things and this and that, but, you know, look at what Dave does. And it's like, no matter what happens, nothing sticks to him. And then the next day they realized, wait a minute, Dave Smith is a problem. And I thought, I'll shut up now.
I am somewhat charmed in the fact that no one who matters seems to have a problem with me for whatever reason. I think maybe it's because I'm a comedian. Like, somehow I just slide in, but like, I'm very friendly with like more of the establishment libertarian.
Oh, yeah,
you know,
sure.
The Reason Magazine people, you know, like there might be one member of the Cato Institute who's not a fan, but well, you know, we'll leave that alone. But there's a lot of those people who have no problem with me. But you're right. I never really got heat in like too much heat until very recently. For all this stuff. And, you know, I don't exactly know why that happened, but, you know, to me, this is the thing that drives me crazy, right? And this is what people don't realize, which I feel like anyone with any common sense would understand. Like, why did Dave have members of the alt-right on? Why does he have the America First people on, Michelle Malkin on? Why would he have any of them? And one of these people, someone with like a couple hundred Twitter followers who's got their pronouns in their bio, you know, it'll be someone like running for Congress, you know, with 200 Twitter followers or something. You're like, okay, that's probably not going to work out. So he tweeted at me, he goes, Dave had Nick Fuentes on his show guaranteeing that the libertarian to alt-right pipeline will continue. And it's like, you have to understand, man, Mr. Libertarian with your, you know, pronouns in your bio, I'm not the reason there's a libertarian to alt-right pipeline. You are. You are
exactly,
the reason. Have you ever spent 5 seconds talking to anyone who went from libertarianism to the alt-right? What do you think they were rejecting? It wasn't us. It was you. And by the way, I kind of get that. I get why people would look at that and go, are you out of your mind? The libertarian position is that we have to celebrate cultural degeneracy. This is the big thing that, you know, that idiot Sarwak gave you a hard time about, that you'll go like, yeah, I mean, like, prostitution shouldn't be illegal and like punished by violence, but it's not exactly something we have to celebrate. Like, that's too much for some of these people to hear, that you're like, yeah, just because something we believe should be legal, we can't also say, yeah, but it's like, it's not exactly like normal, healthy behavior. That's too much. So that's the, I'm the guy who's stuck. Like, I'm sitting here plugging up the floods and you're blaming me for the flood. I can't tell you how many people have reached out to me and been like, hey, you know what, Dave? Like, I found myself drifting down that pipeline and then you kind of pulled me back and made me realize.
That absolutely happens.
That's like, oh, you know what? That wasn't the right way to go, because I wouldn't just, when you're just hysterical, listen, there's nothing worse. If you want a libertarian to alt-right pipeline, you know what's the worst thing you could possibly have was how Jeffrey Tucker handled Richard Spencer. That's the worst thing you could have. Shriek, you're racist and you're a fascist. Get out of here. That makes people go, oh, so you can't even handle the ideas that these guys presenting. And by the way, of all of them, Richard Spencer's ideas are stupid. Like, his understanding of economics is like, we can will things into existence. Oh, great. What a great economic plan that you have there. You know, and like, you can't handle taking on that guy's ideas, and then you could sit around in a room full of neocons and not feel the need to shriek at them, but you shriek. So to me, it's like, you don't understand what the obvious strategy is here, where it's like, hey, I'm going to have these people on. I'm going to treat them with respect, something that nobody else will do. I'm going to take away their main source of energy, which is that everyone acts like, oh my God, you're so horrible, we can't even refute your ideas. And then I'm going to challenge them on a few key points and let people make up their minds for themselves.
Well, not to mention, because this is something you wouldn't want to say because you're not a boastful person. But the fact is, when Dave Smith goes up, not against somebody, because I wouldn't say you're debating people, you're having a discussion with them, and you are sometimes registering your objections. I can't imagine somebody listening to Dave Smith talking to Nick Fuentes and thinking, boy, Nick sure got the better of him. I have full confidence that when they listen to two people talking, and one of them's Dave Smith, they're going to say, huh, I got to learn more about this Dave Smith. I'd like to subscribe to his newsletter, sort of thing. You know what I mean? I'd like to learn more about this guy. So I am not in any way afraid that if people are exposed to other ideas, that they're going to wander in that direction. I think to the contrary, if the person you're having on as a guest, that person's audience listens to you, it's far more likely those people are going to gravitate to you. And well, I happen to think that's a good thing.
Yes. Here's what I've kind of learned over the years, right? I've learned that people on the left who want to shut down discussion, and we all know that these people exist, right? These are the people who are literally blowing bullhorns while Jordan Peterson speaks. Like, they are trying to not let you hear what he has to say. They are not confident that they have the truth on their side. They're not. They're afraid that if you hear from this guy, you will be persuaded by him. And I think for good reason. The alt-right, the Groypers, America First, those people, they are confident that they have the truth on their side. I believe that they're wrong, in a lot of ways at least. I'm confident that we have the truth on our side. And it seems to me like a lot of people in the libertarian world are not. Because if you're confident that we have the truth on our side, what are you so afraid of with people hearing these ideas? And I also, you know, I got to say, maybe this is a little bit my age or the time when I came into libertarianism. Like, I'm a guy who came in 2007 with the Ron Paul moment, the very beginning of it. And I remember that Ron Paul had the courage to say, like, the bravest thing you could possibly imagine saying. And I think for some younger people, this moment is kind of lost. Like, maybe you can't even appreciate it if you weren't around and paying attention at the time, or you were like a young kid at the time. But the George W. Bush years were like, it was all like, you're either with us or you're a terrorist. You praise the American troops and you hate the terrorists. And if you say anything else, like, you're that. And we had just been hit on 9/11. This was scary. And Ron Paul stood up and basically said, you know, actually, the U.S. military are the aggressors in this fight. And I mean, he didn't exactly go as far as to say that, you know, the terrorists are justified, and they're not. He wouldn't say they're justified in killing innocent people, of course. But he certainly let you know that, like, let you put yourselves in their position for a second and understand how it might feel. you know, and like he made it. And that was so dangerous and brave and courageous and correct. And then I remember how everybody would just dismiss libertarians and call them the worst names in the book. And I was like, well, I'm not just going to do that to somebody else because they're saying something that, you know, takes courage to say. Now, when it comes to a lot of these guys, I don't think that they're right in the things that they're saying, but I'm not just going to call you names. Let's like have a discussion of ideas. I hated that when they did that to us. They wouldn't even attempt to refute what you're saying. They would just dismiss you with name calling and slander. I hated that. And I'm not going to be that. So I'm going to approach it from a different way. And the other thing that I see with libertarians is like, with this group of libertarians, like maybe left libertarian isn't even the correct term, but like the social justice libertarians, whatever you want to call them, that group, the pronouns and bios libertarians, okay? That group of people, it's like they do the same thing that I would see other people doing to us, and I hate it. They'll do this thing where it's like, you know, whatever. It's like they'll go, oh, you know, Nick Fuentes is just alt-right. And you're like, well, actually, he's not. You know, he's not. Now, you may not. It's like, okay, there's the alt-right, and then there's like the America First guys. You might see some similarities in them, but they actually don't like each other. They have some different views. They have different ideas about strategy, about presentation, different views about policy. I mean, if you want to actually look into it and learn, it's kind of like when people would look at someone like me or you and go, oh, these Randians. And we'd sit here and go, no, we're not Randians. You don't even know what you're talking about, you know? And then, but they do the same thing to all these other groups. And it's like, you haven't bothered to look into any of what they're actually saying. You're just going to name call and dismiss. And I hated that so much when it was thrown at us that I'm like, I'm not going to be that. I'm not going to do the same thing, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does to me. Well, I would like people to check out, not that you need the help, Dave, but I'm going to throw a little bit your way, Part of the Problem. You're going to enjoy it. You're not going to want to desert the Tom Woods Show altogether. But for those people who have longer commutes and say Woods 30 minutes a day just ain't cutting it, well, you got plenty of programming three times a week from Dave Smith, which you can check out at Part of the Problem over on the Gas Digital Network, gasdigitalnetwork.com. Do you have a promo code that helps you in some way with that?
Yeah, if you want to sign up to be a subscribing listener and you use the promo code POTP, you get a monthly discount and you get a lot of like added bonuses, and you can be a part of our Facebook group, which I blatantly stole from the idea from you, Tom. But I've been listening to a lot of Kinsella, and I don't believe in intellectual property. So I ripped it right off from you.
I mean, Murphy actually calls his group the supporting listeners group. I mean, like, that's
outrageous.
You could at least try, Murphy, you know, try to be not so obvious, right?
Well, I will say, Tom, that as I've said many times before, your podcast is just, you know, it's had like a huge impact on my life as all of your work has. And I recommend it to everybody. It really, you know, changed the way I look at the world, and I've benefited so much. I still go back sometimes, like if there's some issue that comes up, you know, whatever it may be, something with antitrust or something, you know, whatever, something about World War I or something. And I go, all right, hold on, let me go like binge a couple of the old Tom Woods shows I haven't listened to for a while and like get back on my game.
Yeah, I do the same, because sometimes I forget this stuff. It's been years in some case. And I'll point out something that I told people before, but for a while you could only get the most recent 300 or so episodes of the show on your podcast player. And recently we figured out a way to get around that. And now all 1600 plus of them are sitting out there. There's so much libertarian content now. And by the way, this is another reason that I just don't have that much interest in writing books. I've written 12 books, but it's been 12 books for like 6 years now. I haven't written anything. And it's mainly because I feel like what the libertarian movement lacks now is not books. You know, it's not that we need more books. Now, it's not to say there aren't, you know, I wouldn't welcome some on certain topics, but that isn't the primary thing that's holding us back, a lack of books. There are plenty of books out there already that just need to be studied. And there's so much libertarian content out there, folks. There's no excuse for us not to be really, really strong out there, defending ourselves, debating, exchanging ideas with people. We should be doing very well because we can be very, very well briefed, not just with the Tom Wood Show, but also with Part of the Problem. So, Dave, thanks so much for your time today. I'll link to gasdigitalnetwork.com at tomwoods.com/1613. And I'm sure we'll talk again soon.
Absolutely, Tom. Always a pleasure.
All right, folks. A lot of you are home, probably against your will. So that gives you more time to read a Tom Woods ebook because you are going to need to inoculate yourselves against progressivism more than ever. So check out AOCiswrong.com. That's a really darn good ebook, AOC is Wrong. And it don't cost you nothing and it'll pass the time. So that's that. As I said, don't know when Peter Schiff's coming on, but it's pretty darn soon. And we're going to see if we can understand what the long-term consequences of all this will be. So stay tuned for that. Make sure you subscribe to The Tom Woods Show so you get all these episodes delivered automatically. You can do that over at tomwoods.com/apple. We'll see you tomorrow.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of The Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.